Tech of Sports, Episode 6 for April 18th, 2012, Jessica Silverman. This week on the Tech of Sports, Jessica Silverman, fitness enthusiast and marathon runner. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget Stitcher Radio for all your favorite Netcast Studio shows. Stitcher Radio, award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is also a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. You can join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show. This week, we're going to talk about a topic we haven't discussed yet, and it's about endurance running and marathon running. And if you've ever thought about running a marathon or attempting a triathlon, it's something a lot more people are doing these days. My guest tonight has run two marathons in the last 12 months and has set a goal for herself of running a 50-mile ultra marathon. Last year, there were 700 marathons held in the United States and over 1,000 triathlons. Over 500,000 people competed in 26.2-mile marathons, and the total is expected to rise this year. The biggest marathons in the United States are held annually in New York, Chicago, and, of course, Boston. We're going to talk a little bit how technology has invaded the fitness world, as well as the ultra-competitive sport of running marathons, along with 5 and 10Ks, and also competing in triathlons. We'll talk about that and more tonight with our special guest, Jessica Silverman, who happens to be a college student by day and a fitness instructor and marathon runner in her free time. Like I said, she's competed completed two marathons in the last 12 months and is currently training for a third. Down the road, she'd like to run a 50-mile ultra marathon. She also teaches indoor cycling and is also a belly dancer. She's a psychology major at the University of Missouri and looks forward to earning a PhD in psychology and possibly a law degree. Jessica, as a psych major and wanting to compete in an ultra marathon, do you or some people think you need to have your head examined?
Most people, actually. Most people. But, you know, they say that psych majors are psych majors because they're the craziest ones out there. So
that's
maybe
what
that
I hear.
Explains it. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on tonight. And we're going to talk a little bit about running and endurance running and marathon running. And I guess I have to ask you first, did you get a run in or anything in today?
I actually didn't. And days like this when I'm jam-packed and I have a lot of things on my to-do list and I can't get a run in, it's really, really hard on me. But sometimes you do have to take a rest and these kind of force me to do so. So no, I actually had to lay low today.
I guess you can blame it on being on the show tonight. You can got an excuse, I guess.
Yeah, that's one part of it. I know also lately that my training's been a little difficult, so sometimes my runs take longer than I expect, and I didn't want to be late, so I didn't know how long I'd be out there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you have a set training schedule or something in your head that you feel you have to do on an ongoing basis, or does it just depend on day by day how you feel?
A little bit of both. I for the ultra marathon training, which is kind of what I'm trying to build my body back into, I've tried to do it twice already and both failed attempts. But I have an idea that I would like to get at least two runs between 6 to 8 miles during the week and one kind of easy, relaxing 5-mile run. But then on the weekends is when I really go hard. And one day I run like minimum about a half marathon distance. And then the very following day I run something in kind of in the upper teens, in the 20s. And so I get two very, very long runs in back to back on the weekends.
Does that kind of simulate the marathon experience for you then? Is that how you kind of feel about that? Or is that what you're going for?
Actually for marathons, technically, I have already peaked and I'm at marathon level because you only have to reach mile 20 and then you can start tapering right before your race or backing off your miles. But since I'm doing an ultra marathon, it kind of simulates the ultra marathon experience where you have to teach your body to take a lot of abuse for long periods of time. So in order to have these long runs back to back, it teaches my body to kind of get used to being sore and running for hours and hours on end. That's kind of the idea of an ultra marathon, is to be able to run for hours and hours.
And that's kind of interesting. Does it get to the point sometimes where the body just, well, maybe while you're out training, the body just kind of says stop and kind of shuts down because it's had enough?
I've noticed for me on one run, I mean, of course, you always get to that point where you, I guess a lot of runners call it hitting the wall, yeah. Where your body says, you got to stop, I'm tired. And it's running is a very mental sport. So you're going to go as far as your mind will push yourself. Your body will obey, essentially. With ultramarathon training, I found that it's over a series of weeks of training for that my body does start to shut down. I've had issues where I've had, the first time around, I had knee surgery. The second time around, my body would not process the fuel I was trying to feed it on long runs, and so I would start vomiting. So there are ways that it tells you to knock it off, so you have to take a break. But usually with marathon running, I don't find that problem at all.
Do you kind of train differently when you're actually preparing for a race, or you kind of see on the horizon that a race is coming up, than you do when you're kind of just in between races?
Yes, I do. When I'm in between races, usually that's immediately after I've run a race. I take kind of like a few off weeks, and then I get bored and I don't really know where to go with my training. And so what I do is I find another race to run, and then I start training for a race. And that's kind of why I've hit so many marathons in the past year once I've gotten into it, is because I guess I don't know how to train in an off season. That's kind of an issue that I have, is I don't know how to take a break. And so usually what I do, if I start to struggle or I find it hard to get my runs in, I kind of let myself fall out and I just cycle or I just dance and I fall in love with something else for a little bit until I start to miss running, and then I pick it back up again.
There's been kind of a trend recently. A lot of world-class athletes and top athletes claim that they've gone gluten-free when it comes to their eating habits. How do you feel about that, and what's your position and situation with that?
That's really interesting to me. I have to do gluten-free because I have an allergy to gluten. And so for years, I was feeling really sick and nauseated every time I ran, and just all the time in general, and when I was just going about everyday activities. But so that's why I'm on a gluten-free diet now. But it fascinates me that I have heard that it is healthier to get rid of gluten, because a lot of people do struggle with your body processing it and digesting it and things like that, especially with runners. With that much stress on your body, you've got to be able to digest things easily. And so that makes a lot of sense. But for me, I have to do it for health reasons.
Yeah, it kind of started because in tennis, Novak Djokovic made a big deal about himself going gluten-free. And all of a sudden, within 6 months, he became the number one tennis player in the world. And there's been other football players that have all of a sudden become gluten-free, and they feel they're almost at the top of their game within, you know, months after doing that. So that's kind of a hot issue right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a definite improvement in my performance as well, but I just kind of chalked it up to, you know, I'm no longer eating something I'm allergic to, and so sure, my body is doing a lot better. But that is very interesting. It may be that they had kind of the same issues that I had, that their body had a very mild, they're very mildly allergic to it, and so now that they've eliminated it from their diet, they're able to perform better. That, I mean, food and nutrition plays a huge part in performance, as it's thought to be, but I mean, it's not just about build, and it's not just about genetics, and it's not just about talent. Like, you have to have the right kind of fuel for your body to be at its best.
Yeah, everybody's body is different, so I think it's a different decision for everybody.
Right.
Talking a little about technology and you're running, maybe talk a little about the equipment you use and shoes or any other technology that maybe you use in your training or that you bring out for race day.
When I first started running marathons, I really got into, like, you know, buying hydration belts, which are essentially these belts that wrap around your waist and have the bottles of water, whatever you want to fill with it. They also come with pockets, so you can bring fuel, like gels or goo or whatever, kind of like electrolyte supplements with you when you run. But as I started getting into ultra marathon training, I was getting blisters and toenails were falling off and my legs were feeling awful. And I started to realize that shoes are essential to your running. As I'm sure a lot of people know, that Vibrams are big, the five-finger Vibrams, and also, like, a lot of the minimalist shoes are coming out. And so it's kind of becoming about the barefoot running craze, where you don't have as much padding on your shoes as companies originally designed. Like a lot of those, like the Nike Shox, I believe, that have the real thick soles are just pretty much, I think I had one exercise and fitness instructor say that it's equivalent to almost running in heels. You know, like it's so padded that it really starts to hinder your body and your feet and weakens it. And so I've switched over to Newtons. I run in Lady Isaac Newtons, and they, ever since then, I have not had shin splints. I haven't had as many knee problems. And I actually found out that when I run, my feet swell so much that I go from my original size 8 to a size 10. So wow. I found out that, yeah, that I need a lot bigger shoes when I run. And so I don't lose toenails and I don't get blisters, and I'm essentially, I can perform better because of my shoes. And I've found that with a lot of people, is that once they switch over to the minimalist shoes that really push for that 4-foot strike. So instead of kind of like landing on your heel when you run and following through, you land more on kind of the ball of your foot. And it saves you a lot more energy and essentially adds seconds onto your run. So not only are you faster, your feet are stronger, and it's more of a natural movement for your body. So shoes are extremely important. And so I've switched over to those. But otherwise, I kind of kick a lot of technology. I got into technology in the beginning and then realized that a lot of it is kind of burdensome. I've kicked my hydration belt. I don't use goo anymore. I've taught my body to kind of train without fuel. But I do like have to run with my iPhone or iPod. There's no question about it. When I'm out there for 3 to 4 hours, I can think about a lot of things and my mind is always racing, but not for that long. So I have to have some kind of entertainment. So I definitely cannot do without that.
When you said your shoes go up two sizes while you're running a long race like that, do you have to buy then a size bigger? Is that what you get, a size bigger, or do the shoes kind of morph with your with the foot while you're running?
Oh no, I have to buy a size 10 shoe when I buy these running shoes, which make my feet look like boats. But you know,
for training, and I'm going to talk about one later on or at the end of the show. Are there any apps or devices maybe that you keep track of your training? Are you religious about writing down and charting maybe what you did on a particular day and or for a week, and say, I have to do this day, or you just kind of wing it each day?
I was running with Runkeeper for a little bit, but I don't like hearing my pace constantly, and I know you can turn that off, but it just kind of, I feel too pressured to have a certain kind of time, and I start to kind of compete with myself. And on long runs, I can't really, that's not the goal of it, essentially. So what I do use is the Live Strong app. That way I can track my calories, what I've eaten for the day, what I need to eat, and how many calories I'm going to burn in my workouts. Otherwise, I find that I don't eat enough, and I start to suffer from malnutrition and anemia and all those things that come with that. So I do use the Live Strong, and in that I can track what I've run each day, what I've done each day, so I can kind of tailor my workout for the rest of the week through that application.
What about the little chip that Nike came out that like attaches to the shoe? That's a little more stealth kind of when it comes. Have you tried that or thought about that at all?
I haven't. I'm kind of a I guess you could say a naturalist when I run. I don't like to use supplements. I don't like to use a lot of fancy technology, mostly because I don't I'm even iffy about running with my iPhone because I know they can usually withhold in things like rain and snow and stuff like that. But really what I use is just kind of the bare essentials. I think another thing that I use when I run, especially in the winter and it snows up here, is called Yak Tracks.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
Yak Tracks are these kind of rubber and metal, almost like cleats that wrap around the bottom of your shoe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, I use those when I run. But really, in terms of things like from Nike, I've seen those, and I'm a college kid. I got a college kid budget, and so I gotta kind of pay for what I can, and so I make do with the bare essentials.
Do you maybe sit down then at the end of the month and kind of look at what you did over that month and see where you are if you're training for something, or do you never just really analyze? You go just more by feel.
I do sit down at the end of the week and track my miles and what I've done, what kind of cross training and everything that all adds up. Because with the ultra training, like I said, it's really about being able to put all those miles on. You know, for a marathon, they say you should be running about 40 to 60 miles a week. And so for ultra marathon running, depending on your goal, so for 50 miles, and again, I'm still really new to ultra marathon running, so this is all kind of a guesstimation, but you want to have over 50 to 60 miles a week. And so I'm kind of pushing into that. Right now I'm about at 48 to 50 miles a week, and I'm kind of pushing into more miles. So I do look at the total miles at the end of the week. Yes.
In that answer, you mentioned cross training. Any runner I've ever talked with says they always have to think of something to do for cross training because they just can't, either mentally or physically, they can't just do running. And you said you teach fitness and you dance. Is that the extent of the cross training that you do, do you mix in some other activities as well?
It really depends on, like you said, what I'm tired
time.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time. What you have time for.
Definitely. Since I teach and I instruct fitness classes or cycling classes, that really helps because that's my job. And so the fact that I have to go to work and I'm also getting some cross training in is great for me. Dance has been a little more difficult because, right, I don't have very much time. And since I'm on the ensemble, I have to rehearse and I have to learn choreographies and I have to plan for performances. And that can really get in the way of training for a marathon. My very first marathon, I made that mistake of trying to be in a show and train for a marathon and all of that, and I ended up needing knee surgery because I just wore my body out. But otherwise, if I, you know, my work schedule for teaching fitness classes goes on semester, so when the semester's over, I kind of have 2 or 3 weeks that I need to kill, and I can't just cycle. So sometimes I'll swim, which I'm absolutely horrible at. I'm a land animal, essentially, so I cannot swim. But I also try to lift some weights and get some upper body in there. For a while, I played rugby for a couple weeks, but after I got a concussion, that was out the window.
Yeah, I was always curious if there's certain activities that they don't advise runners to do because maybe they affect the muscles in a negative way that, you know, that isn't a benefit for running. Have you thought about that, or is there anything that you won't do because it doesn't help you, but it would hurt you for the running? Have you thought about that?
For me, actually, and it's kind of reversed in belly dancing. They say don't run at all. Your body gets so tight that it's hard to be fluid and do the movements. So that's kind of backfired in that regard. But really for me, it's about what's going to injure me and what's going to take a lot of my time and take away from my training. So with rugby, it's a rough sport and
absolutely,
it's really risky. Yeah, it's risky to play that. And if I have a marathon in June, I'm going to get hurt and it's going to take away from training. So that's kind of for me what I look at, but I haven't really bumped into anything that I said, no, this is going to put too much strain on me.
I think they said in rugby, there's more head injuries than per person or per capita than in any other sport. So, that's
yeah,
a rough one to play.
Definitely. I actually, did some research and gave a speech over it in my public speaking class about head injuries and how rough those sports are. And there was an Australian study that talked about how there are more head injuries in rugby and soccer and things like that.
Right.
So, I mean, football, they have helmets, but in rugby, it's essentially almost the same sport and you do not have a helmet. So
no,
it's
those,
rough.
And they play dirty, those guys.
Oh yeah, the girls do too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I used to referee some intramural college basketball games, and the dirtiest players and the worst games to official were the girls' games. They were mm-hmm. they played dirty. The guys pretty much played straight up, but those girls would, if you gave them an inch, they would take a mile.
Yep, they're underestimated.
Oh, but never. We don't do that. Let's take a break for a second here. You can catch your breath and. And I'm going to mention just a quick link for the Netcast Studio Amazon affiliate link. And it's netcaststudio.com/Amazon. There's no extra cost to use that. And you're helping support the Netcast Studio family of shows with that. And I always try to pick something off Amazon that anyone could go out and buy that's kind of related to the topic. And I don't know if you've read this, but it's the book is called 50-50 by Dean Karnazes, and it's about a guy who ran 50 marathons in 50 days. And he says how you can achieve this too. And I don't know who he's talking to who can achieve this too, because it's kind of insane. And I've doubted that he actually did this, but I haven't read the book, but by reading the reviews, it seems legit. And I don't know how he did it. He said he ran 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 consecutive days. So, I mean, it may be more of an inspirational tale than actually a book about marathons, but that's on for your Kindle or your electronic book reading device for $9.99. It may be worth, if you're interested in marathon running or ultra marathons, it may be something you want to dip into and see how it is. I don't know if you'd want to read that or not, Jessica. 50 marathons in 50 days. You may feel, I don't know if you'd feel inferior or if you would think the guy's a nut, or maybe you would want to quit running altogether after reading that. But it caught my eye at least. So we'll go on and talk a little more about fitness here, especially on women's fitness. And a lot of women athletes that I've interviewed or talked with, they seem to be a little even more careful and dedicated to their craft or their sport than a lot of the men. The men just kind of take it more in stride. The women seem to really almost micromanage what they do to prepare for their sport. Is that something that you've noticed, or are you guilty of that?
I am definitely guilty of micromanaging what I do for my sport. But I'm also guilty of doing that in everything in my life.
A whole nother show. That's a whole nother show.
Well, I think it carries over, actually. Everything I learn in running goes through my life. But I don't, for women, you know, it's really hard being on a college campus, and that's, you know, when I go to the gym, that's kind of, especially as an instructor, that's what I see. Usually, I do have, most of the girls who turn up to my cycling classes are regulars, and they're mostly women that turn up. Men, sometimes I'll get a trickle of men, but the men who do show up come, you know, once or twice a week, same classes, always on schedule. A lot of my guy friends are, can be a little more lax with it, but they seem just as committed, I think. In fact, I a lot of my female friends don't really, they're kind of like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, to the gym, lift some weights, or I'm going to go jump on the elliptical, or I'm going to go for a run today. They seem a little more spontaneous about what they're going to do in terms of their workout. It's kind of how they're feeling or what the weather's like. I see the same men all the time in the gym lifting weights. So I'm not really sure if there's more dedication from women or men.
I think what I was talking about were more like world class or athletes that compete, where men kind of are, they seem a little more laid back. And I'm talking about professional athletes that I've talked with or that type of thing, or top level college athletes. The women are seem very strict about their training and what they put in their body and stuff, where the guys are, maybe that's just the air they give off, but the guys maybe don't seem quite as serious about it. Is that something that maybe is just my opinion, or is there something to that?
I think I took a sociology of sport class, and if you kind of look at the sociological aspect of it, it's, you know, women, essentially sports is a male-dominated world, and women have to fit in, and so they've always got to be at their best. They've always got to take it seriously. They're really working against the idea of being a female in sports. It's you're not really taken as seriously, I feel like, because it's, you know, guys go out and they play basketball and they play football. I mean, if you look at the attendance at the professional level and at the collegiate level, it's always, guys are always, I mean, everyone goes to the men's games. Football, basketball, you have to buy tickets on the Mizzou campus for those. But some of the women's basketball isn't as popular at all. You know, you can sell out the stadiums, but, you know, for women's, it's kind of like you get a trickling of fans. So I think that women have to be a lot more cutthroat about it and very strict about it, because they struggle with that competition of going against the guys and the girls versus just their own sport.
Yeah, I can see that. I think you're probably right on that. That leads us up to like a race day, and take us through a race day for a marathon, and, you know, even maybe the day before a race. And maybe, what do you eat? Do you load up on carbs? Do you drink something special? And take us right up to that moment of when the race starts.
For the two marathons that I've had, both of them, I freaked out equally. I was an absolute basket case about 2 weeks out, actually. And so I kind of have to get in my zone in order to maintain that calm and kind of, keep my zen going. So what I do for usually is my second marathon was a night race. I ran the Las Vegas Strip at night. And so I had all day and the day before to kind of prep. So what I do usually is, yes, I do load up on carbs. I eat really easy things to digest because otherwise you've got problems when you're out running. Usually you have to stop at a porta potty every few miles and that cuts off on your time. So I cut out fiber. I try to eat really light. And usually I stick to things like protein, like peanut butter and things that aren't going to really be hard for my stomach to digest. So no steak dinners. I will carb up, definitely. But again, since I have to be gluten free, I have to really watch what I eat. So usually I'll bring a box of cereal with me, like Rice Chex or something like that. I love cereal, so I'll carb up on that. I can go through a box in a day, usually. And what I'll do for especially for the Las Vegas Strip at night, all I did was just eat cereal and I slept all day. That's all I did. I just laid in bed, I ate cereal, and I slept. I'd wake up every few hours, I'd eat a little bit, and then I'd go back to sleep. And I didn't leave my room. I stayed in my hotel room. I didn't talk to my parents. I just kind of like had to get my brain and my mind where I wanted it to be in order to compete. It is, even if I've run, if you run 1 or 10 marathons, it's still a scary thing every time you walk up to that starting line. It's a long way. You're gonna be hurting, and you know it. Even if you've trained. You see the competition out there. You see the people with the giant quads and the people who, are sitting there sprinting right before the race, and it starts to mess with you. You hear people talking about their times. And so you really have to focus, at least I do. And so what I do is I eat cereal, I sleep, I stay by myself, and I just kind of mentally prep for the race. And so even if it's a night race or a morning race, I try to get sleep. I usually don't. And I get to that starting line and I put my headphones in and I don't listen to anybody else. I just focus on what I'm about to do.
Yeah, I think that works for you. Maybe other people have a different idea about it, but I don't see anything wrong with that. A night marathon seems a little unique because usually when you hear those marathons, they usually start early or right in the morning. So you probably have to maybe alter your sleep patterns a little bit for a night marathon.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about me is I can sleep all day every day, so that came in handy especially. So, but for the morning races, I do, the night before I'll go out and I'll have, in this case, I have to have pasta or pizza. I'll do the essential carbing, but I try to keep it very basic so that my body's not struggling to really digest that. I read recently that you actually need to start carbing up, I think. Was it a week or 2 weeks before race versus just trying to cram it in the first 2 days, which makes a lot of sense. You're putting your body through a lot of stress that you're not used to. And your body essentially does have enough energy to run stored to run the kind of distance you need to run. So you really don't need to go out and have like 20 pancakes and things like that. But it's always fun.
Sure. Okay, the race just ended. And now you can relax, or what? Talk a little bit about the recovery, like right after the 12 hours, maybe after a race.
Well, if I'm walking, usually I try to get my foam roller out. A foam roller, I guess I should have mentioned this on tools I use. I recently was introduced to a foam roller. I don't know if you're familiar with what the foam rollers are. I'm sure talking to professional athletes, you might be.
Is it like one of those is it like one of those bands that helps you stretch like after
A little bit, but
does the same thing as that maybe?
It's a tube. It's just a giant tube of compacted foam, and you just kind of use your body weight to roll out the soreness in your muscles. It's like a deep tissue massage that you give yourself. And all athletes I know who use this have a love-hate relationship with their foam roller because it's extremely painful, but you feel amazing afterwards. And this has saved me after both marathons. I go and I roll. I use my foam roller, and that way I can at least walk with only a little bit of a limp the next day. But after that, and it's funny because you think I dream of food when I run, honestly. And at the end of it, you just don't want to eat anything. So I try to choke back some food. And usually I do destination marathon runs. So I try to walk around the city that I'm in. I spend time with my family since I ignored them that weekend before the race. And I try to just recover from all the calories I've burned. So, I mean, essentially it's just kind of coming down from that soreness and that pain and that work and just taking a breather, like you said. And it's very hard to unwind after 26.2 miles, but.
Yeah, that roller's interesting. Now, I have a mental picture in my head now of a 350-pound football lineman rolling around on one of those rollers on the field after, like, a training camp practice or something. I don't know if that's a pleasant picture or not.
It's a little awkward. It's not something I would use in front of, say, my 94-year-old grandmother, but because you do have to roll your body, and it's kind of strange. But as one of my friends say, it is kind of like basically making sweet, sweet love to your foam roller. It's pretty interesting, but it's a lifesaver. I always make all my other friends who do marathons or halves roll on it.
Yeah, let's wrap it up here. One more question about the ultra marathoning. How do you know when you're going to be ready for that? I know you haven't ran one yet, so maybe you don't know. But what stage do you have to get at before you think, now I'm ready?
I think what I'll want to do, and I was actually talking to a friend about this, I think what I will do is when I get to that about 43, 45 mile marker, that's when I'll say, all right, I'm going to register for this and I'm going to do it. And that's when I get there and I feel strong about it versus just kind of stumbling into that mileage by accident. That's when I know that I'll be ready because, like I said, the rest of it's all mental. Those last few miles is just going to be me pushing myself mentally. So I'll be ready for it at that point.
Sure. I know I always wrap up with the last question here. I know you mentioned your iPod while you're running and your foam roller, but do you have another piece of modern technology maybe in your personal life that you can't live without at this point?
I really think that's, besides my computer, my iPhone has replaced everything for me, really. It's my entertainment. It's my GPS, especially because I have a really bad sense of direction, which isn't good as a runner. But so really it is probably my computer besides my iPhone, but my iPhone is taking the cake for all of it. So
yeah, I hear that from a lot of people. They feel lost without it. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. They do so much, and I'll mention that with an app review I'm going to do coming up. But I really appreciate you being on, Jessica. And that was a lot of good information that maybe a lot of people had questions about and they didn't know where to go for an answer about it. And I think maybe you answered questions for a lot of people. I appreciate you being on.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed. I always enjoy talking about this stuff. So.
Yeah, and I don't know if you want to put out there your Twitter name or anything, if anyone wants to follow you and follow your pursuits as you head for another marathon and maybe head for an ultra marathon. This is your minute or moments to put out your contact information or where people can follow you.
All right. Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is thejub, J-U-B. So feel free to follow me. I always tweet when I'm doing my workout plans, things like that. I also have a blog. I haven't posted anything in a while, but it's called Under the Radar. It's about being an unprofessional athlete and being amateur and trying to fighting through that. So I always post links to it on my Twitter. So if you just follow my Twitter, you'll get that information. So thanks again.
Well, your training, so you don't have time to update your blog. So
essentially,
we'll let you slide. Appreciate you being on.
Thanks again, Rick.
Sure, no problem. We really appreciate Jessica for being on. And before we wrap up tonight, I'd like to do just a quick review here of an app that I've tried, and the people actually, I'm in the Metro Atlanta area, and these people are also in the Metro Atlanta area, and it's in an age where we hear about apps and developers selling out to big companies and Instagram being sold. This app was actually created by a husband and wife couple that are fitness nuts but they do app developing in the spare time, and they kind of created it as to fill a need for themselves. And it's called OutTry. It's a $4.99 app in the App Store for any iOS device. And it's actually an app that is six things in one. It is an events list, a training log, a checklist. There's a calculator in there. a nifty GPS tracker, and a timer. And any runner or triathlete knows that they need a timer. But what's special about the app is it's really easy to use, and you can really track your training in there, your race times. You can actually set goals for upcoming events. And the app is just it does so much for $4.99. I recommend it for anyone that's training for a triathlon or a race, or in the summertime there's lots of 5 and 10 Ks. It would work for that. I mean, put in your distance and the time you did it. It'll give you a pace of what you did. So I mean, it really is a lot going on in one app. And for a fitness nut or a running enthusiast, I think it's a no brainer. So once again, it is called OutTri, two words, OutTri, and it is in the App Store for your iDevice, $4.99. So that's going to wrap it up for tonight. And just want to remind you, the Netcast Studio has many other shows that may be of interest to you. You can head over to netcaststudio.com and check out the variety of shows. That is it for this evening. Waves of Tech will be coming up later tonight. And you've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Netcast Studio production.